We're studying the Gospel of John, but this morning we're not going to be in John. We're interrupting John and waiting for Easter to come, because the next chapter in John is the resurrection, and rather than doing that before Easter, I thought we'd just do it at Easter. That might be appropriate. And in the meantime, we're doing a three-part series on one verse in James, James chapter 1 and verse 19. That makes for a longer series, but we'll just do it in three, hopefully. One of the most powerful ministry gifts that you and I have is also one of the most neglected. And what is it? It's the ear, not the mouth. It's the ear. God tells us something when he gives us one mouth and two ears. We can shut one, but not the other. Be a good listener. We underestimate how powerful listening is as a ministry tool. I'm amazed at how many of us have gone through most of our life with very seldom, if ever, having had an experience where we felt someone really was listening to our soul, not to just our words, but really connecting with who we were, who we are, and what we say, what we're afraid of, what brings us joy, peace, so forth and so on. We talk a lot, and we hear a lot, but sometimes listening doesn't take place. James 1:19, but everyone must be quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to anger. We'll talk about slow to speak and slow to anger next week, Lord willing. But we note Winston Churchill's comment: courage is what it takes to stand up. Courage is what it takes to stand up and speak. Courage is also what it takes to sit down and listen. Public speaking is one of the scariest things for most people, from surveys. Everyone listens. Well, everyone hears. But listening is hard work if it's done well. And listening requires energy. It burns calories psychologically, spiritually. Any problem, big or small, within a family always seems to start with bad communication. Someone isn't listening. One of my best Fred Brooks quotes. He said, whenever Nancy and I are in an argument, this is the best way to handle it. He says, honey, I just wasn't listening well. And when I thought about that, I said, boy, you know, that is true. I think of my relationships with Cece and with my kids. That's usually what happens. People don't feel listened to. And then the volume gets turned up, or we just throw in the towel. Two fine Jewish ladies who wrote a fascinating book on rearing children. One of their comments was, living with real children can be humbling. With hypothetical children, it's very easy. But with real children, it's not. And the title of their book, I've mentioned several times, is classic: How to Talk So Kids Will Listen, and Listen So Kids Will Talk. Isn't that a great title? I mean, who doesn't want to read that book as a parent? Stephen Covey has written a number of books, and the one that basically put him on the map was Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. And it was followed by Seven Habits of Highly Effective Teens, Highly Effective Marriages, Highly Effective Families. And one of the things he proposed in this book was similar to what he proposed in his first book. And that is to make a family covenant of your purpose and your core values, to reduce your family's core values and purpose into a statement. And this was part of the statement for his family. We covenant as a family to make effective communication a priority, which means that we will make it safe for others to be effective communicators by empathetically listening to their minds and hearts, and we will be honest in our interactions, not deceptive, manipulative, or self-protective. And he would have every member of the family, mother and father, teenage children, sign it. It went on the refrigerator. And they held one another accountable. That I thought was a phenomenal idea. So when all of a sudden Junior basically breaks the rules, you go to the refrigerator and say, "You signed this, Junior. Don't argue with me. This is basically what you agreed to." And unfortunately for parents, when mom or dad break the rules, Junior says, "Aha, mom, you signed it too." The discipline of listening well and speaking honestly is powerful in terms of families. And from Stephen Covey's position, I think he's right on target. This is crucial for healthy families. Many people see the sense that James, the epistle of James, the New Testament, really is the Proverbs of the New Testament, because much of what James says is paralleled in Proverbs. Proverbs 18:13, for example, says something very similar to James 1:19. "He who gives an answer before he hears, it is folly and shame to him." In other words, there's a place for answering, place for talking, but after hearing, after listening. Women like silent men. They think they're listening. Unfortunately, that's not always the case. Last week, we looked at this passage, which basically gives us an entrance into the three areas where we as Christians are challenged to listen. Our self-talk. How do we listen to our inner voices? Being it a voice from the Spirit of God, or a voice from our past, our parents, grandparents, so forth and so on. How do we listen? It's not just who we listen to. We have lots of voices in our mind, in our head. What do we listen to and how do we listen to it? How do we listen to Scripture, God's Word? And this morning we're going to talk about the third aspect. How do we listen to one another? Proverbs 12 and verse 15. "The way of the fool is right in his own eyes, but a wise man is he who listens to counsel." And the counsel is not just from wise people. Sometimes the best counsel we get are from people who don't intend to give us good counsel or don't think they're giving us good counsel. But if we're proper listeners, we learn from them. I suggest that we can learn from almost everyone if we listen properly. Paul Tillich, who I don't often quote, but I think he's on target here. The first duty of love is to listen. The way in which we love people best is first by listening to them, by really showing enough care and concern that we will work to hear their heart. How should we respond to those who are made in the image of God? When we left the Gospel of John, we were talking about the importance of Christ's humanity and how his humanity becomes a model for what it means to be human. But the implications of that have to do with the way in which we relate to other human beings. And I'm going to suggest that one of the ways in which we respect the image of God in people is by listening. James chapter 3, verses 9 to 10, in the same epistle. "With it," he's speaking of the tongue, "we bless our Lord and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the likeness of God. These things ought not to be, or not ought to be this way." And he's here talking about the way we use our tongue, but it also applies to the way in which we listen. The way we listen to people and talk to people and about people tells us a lot about how we view them, what kind of respect we have or disrespect. One of the most sincere forms of respect is actually listening to what another has to say, hearing what their heart is all about. I'm going to suggest four things that are helpful in terms of developing an ability to listen. The first is shut up. It's hard to listen if you're talking or waiting to talk. And for most of us, myself included, that's usually what happens. When someone starts sharing with me something, I'm already ahead of them. I know what they're going to say, or at least I think I do. And when they give me two dots, I'll connect it and make a picture. And then I'll say, just save your time. I'll tell you basically what the answer is, or basically my response or something. At that point, I'm communicating to them, I'm not listening. Proverbs 10:19. When there are many words, transgression is unavoidable. But he who restrains his lips is wise. He who basically holds his tongue is wise and listens. I need to hear that all the time. And I'm not a blabbermouth generally, but I process things quickly. Sometimes not accurately, but I process them quickly. I may be wrong, but never in doubt, kind of thing. The word listen contains the same letters as the word silent. I don't know what that means. Again, Stephen Covey. Most people do not listen with the intent of understanding. They listen with the intent to reply, to respond in some way. Resist the temptation to jump to conclusions. The first thing that, the first challenge we have is to just hold our tongue and resist the temptation to rush to judgment. We'll talk more about that next week. Giving into distractions suggests that those distractions are more important than the one listened to. Excuse me. I mean, this happens all the time. How many conversations have you been at dinner and this comes out? I remember our families went to the beach some time ago. Cece and I and David and Debbie and their spouses and their kids. On the beach, we had a lot of fun. Got into the place where we were staying. Everybody went to their corner, got out their devices, and Cece and I were hoping to have a conversation, and everyone was talking to someone on the other part of the planet, texting them. It's so easy to do that. And what we don't realize is that we're suggesting that the present company is not worth listening to. Multitasking is not for listeners. It's really easy. I don't know how many times Cece has come into my office. She's learned now not to come in with the question as she comes in. She comes in now and just sits and waits for me to give her attention. Giving attention means looking her in the eye. Now, I'm looking at the computer. I say, oh, yes, what do you want? She says, look at me. I'm busy. That multitasking, I can do more things at one time than other people can. Keep talking. I'm just answering this email. Go ahead. At that point, even if I can listen, I'm registering that hearing the person is not that important. It's not so important that it will crowd out other distractions. Scott Peck, you cannot truly listen to anyone and do something else at the same time. You can hear them. And you might superficially, if your talk is shop talk or small talk, but if a person's really sharing their heart, it's hard to hear or listen. If they're sharing their fears or their joys, you can't participate in that with them if you are basically doing lots of other things at the same time. Realize that by empathetically listening to another, you are actually edifying them. Part of the difficulty that I think many of us have as Christians is we don't realize that listening is a ministry gift and tool. Ministry is not just a distraction from something that's more important in ministry. Listening is a ministry. You don't have to say anything to minister to people. If you can listen to them empathetically and really hear them, what most of us want is not someone to solve our problems, though we want that superficially. But what our heart longs for is to know that we're not alone in our trouble. And oftentimes, as a male and as a pastor, I was shocked by the fact that people would come to my office emotionally, spiritually bleeding, and with a tremendous problem that no one could answer. And I would feel frustrated because I couldn't answer it. I couldn't give them tangible help. I couldn't say, rise up and walk. But by just listening to them, they seemed to be encouraged. The fact that someone would understand, someone would come alongside and not say, get over it, in the name of Jesus, get over it, snap out of it. Listening is, as I said, the neglected gift that God has given us. And it doesn't require a great deal of skill or training. You don't have to have a theological education. You just have to be human. You just have to have ears that really work and a heart that is willing to listen to another heart. When you listen with empathy to another person, you give that person psychological air. Again, Stephen Covey, who is a Mormon, has written, again, a number of books, as I've said. They're all quite good. He has a lot to say. He comes from a culture that basically has spent a lot of time cultivating healthy families. Secondly, seek out. Be an assertive listener. Philippians chapter 2, verse 20. For I have no one else, Paul says, of kindred spirit, who will genuinely be concerned for your welfare. There's a difference between showing interest and really taking interest. Showing interest, most of us can do that. We can basically, eye contact, yes, we can look you in the eye. But are we really with our heart reaching out and investing ourselves? I can remember a young man who was a law student at Carolina several years ago. This is the first decade of the church, of this church. His name is Larry Rodman, one of the most unusual guys I've met, because he was one of these guys, when you sat down with him, you get the impression it was just the two of you. No one else was in the world. He had the ability, and not just with me, it was with everyone he met. When he showed up, he showed up. He basically gave you his heart and his eyes and his mind. He listened. He heard. He worked at that. You could see that he was busily trying to connect the dots. This is what you're trying to say. I hear you, kind of thing. And it came natural for him. It was so unusual. Unfortunately, it was unusual. You know, I've never forgotten that. I can remember almost all the conversations I had with him. He had that special ability to really connect through listening. And I said, boy, that is powerful. You went away from those encounters feeling energized, just as Covey was saying. It energizes you to feel as though someone really heard you. Someone really is with you. You're not alone. They share your joys. They share your fears. They share your sorrows, so forth and so on. Seeking out. Many people seldom feel deeply heard. And when we do feel heard, we don't forget it. Now, I can't speak for everyone, but can say that for most of us, myself included, most of what I know about human behavior comes from looking at my own experience, my own reaction to life situations. Now, the part of the danger there is I tend to project my experience onto other people, and I know enough in my mind to recognize that is not only not fair, it's not realistic. Not everyone looks at the world the same way I do. There are some people who do, but there are lots of people, many more people, who do not look at the world the way I do. And I've got to basically, if I love them, I've got to speak their language and meet them and build a bridge to their world, not insist that they live in my world. I'm the kind of person that doesn't mind being autonomous. I'm a self-starter. I don't need lots of bells and whistles to motivate me. I don't need material things don't motivate me. I'm motivated by other things. That's not true with many people. Many people want rules. They want a reward at the end. They want a goal to strive for. They want encouragement along the way. Now, certainly, I'm not opposed to that. Matter of fact, I enjoy that. I just don't need that in the same way many other people do. But I assume wrongly that other people should be like me. or they are like me. And then if I don't show up for them in the area of their need or their language, I'm not going to edify them. I'm going to frustrate them. And when I was on the staff, one of the things that I learned too late, I think, in many respects, as I reflect back on my role as a pastor, a teaching pastor or a lead pastor in a community of leaders, was the fact that even though I knew in my head people were different than I was, at the end of the day, I treated them pretty much as though they were like me and wanted the same kind of environment that I wanted and felt comfortable in. And that was a big mistake, because a lot of people, as I think back, really wanted me to have a role that was going to be closer to what they needed as opposed to what I was most comfortable with. Most people, as a result, just really don't feel understood or heard. If you want to listen, be listened to, you should invest your life in listening. Marge Piercy is, again, a person ordinarily I would not quote. She's a pretty radical feminist, but she's insightful, and she has hit the nail on the head here. If you want to speak well, look at people who communicate through speaking well. If you want to listen well, remember people who have listened to you and what made the difference. What did you learn from them? What can you learn from them? And in the evolution of her life story, listening was a big part of her learning experience. Now, she wound up in a different place than many of my friends would wind up in terms of her ideological world. But where she wound up came largely from the way in which she learned to listen to people around her. Asking honest questions is an indication that you are willing to listen. Being able to be a good questioner is helpful. And I don't mean just asking questions to bait people to basically give you an invitation to tell your story. And oftentimes, when we ask questions, what we're really saying is, would you please talk about this topic so I can talk about this topic? Our questions really are encouraging people to let us talk. That's not the kind of question that really is helpful. The kind of question that's helpful in listening is a question that really is going to enable a person to reveal what they're really afraid of, what really turns them on in terms of joy and peace, and what really is their concern. As I've said, the anachronism for love, L-O-V-E, listening to concerns, overlooking faults, valuing strengths, and empathizing with joys and pain. That love is more than that, but that's where love can start. Listening to concerns. What are you really concerned about? Or, as I've said, oftentimes in counseling situations when people can't explain what's going on, the question that I would often ask is, where does it hurt in your life? What hurts in your life? I'm not talking about physical hurting. I'm talking about psychological, spiritual hurting. Where are you hurting? And if people will be willing to talk about that, that's the doorway, the trailhead, if you follow it, to where the real struggles are. Seek to find and affirm areas of common ground, understanding, agreement, perspectives, and so forth. One of the easiest ways in which we can feel as though someone is with us is if they can help us understand areas where, at least in a superficial way, they and we share common ground. We share the same views politically. We share the same views in terms of sports. I don't see enough blue around here, light blue this morning. Some dark blue, ugh. That's pretty bad. But, I mean, just anything that's superficial like that, that kind of small talk can be helpful in just establishing a common ground where we can build from that to areas where we might disagree or see things differently, or have insights that haven't been seen before. Everyone is an expert authority on their own life story, their history, their feelings, their perspectives, and so forth. When people basically feel they can't talk because they don't know anything, they do know a lot about themselves. As a matter of fact, no one knows as much about how they really feel or what they think than they do. And again, in talking to people, in questioning people, in listening to people, if you're at a loss, Just remember, everyone is an expert on their own story. One of the most painful experiences that I can remember in my life, repeatedly, has been times when I've been in trouble and no one seemed to be concerned about my story. I couldn't ask people to be concerned, but what I really wanted someone to ask me is to say, sit down, tell me your story. Tell me your story. Tell me your earliest recollections of growing up. What kind of relationships did you have? What do you remember from your childhood? And why was that significant, do you think? What kind of events and people shaped your life? Only you will know that. And the effect they've had on your life will be unique to you, perhaps only. Understanding people, if you want to understand people and listen to them, ask those questions. And they should feel comfortable responding. They maybe can't talk about astrophysics or chemical evolution or, Greek participles. Those things are going to be intimidating. But when it comes to their own story, everyone is the foremost expert. And if you can make it safe for them to be honest, you will have communication. Thirdly, show up. Empathize with ideas and feelings. Come alongside to understand. Your first responsibility is to understand, not to be understood. I got to remind myself of that all the time. It is so easy for me to work with the assumption that if people only understood what I'm trying to say, they wouldn't have problems. Well, and I could say, if I only understood what I was trying to say, I wouldn't have problems. I know a whole lot more of what should be done than what I actually do, like everybody else. That's, if we're honest, all of us are going to say that. If we can only base it. I remember some student leaders in the Christian movements on campus were saying, you can't take someone further than you are. Now, in a certain sense, there's a bit of wisdom in that. But boy, if that's the case, most of us would have very little to do in terms of ministry, because there are areas where all of us need to be taught. All of us need to hear. Sometimes we just need to hear ourselves. Sometimes we certainly need to hear one another. The righteous is concerned for the rights of the poor. The wicked does not understand such concerns. And here, this proverb is not talking about listening, but it's talking about empathy. And it's basically has implications for listening. When people are concerned, they listen. And when people don't listen, they don't understand why people are listening. Or why they are delving where they're delving, or asking what they're asking. Brené Brown, one of my favorite authors, who's became famous as a TED speaker, but has again done a lot of research on shame and guilt, and has written a number of good books in this area, has this to say. If we can share our story with someone who responds with empathy and understanding, shame can't survive. Shame exists in the darkness of being alone. When we're listened to, someone's with us. One of the things that struck me recently when I was studying Psalm 23 was the central theme of that psalm is, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. The whole psalm is about not being alone. There are no exhortations in that psalm, no agenda of what to do. It's just a reminder, you're not alone. And that's, I think, one of the reasons that psalm, although it's in a literary sense beautiful and short, it's easy to memorize, one of the reasons it's so popular, so powerful, is that it doesn't challenge us to be anything other than realize we're not alone. God is with us. People seldom sense you are listening until you affirm their feelings and remember what they said. There was a survey done by Christianity Today several years ago of what people look for in a pastor. And I did the same survey in a home group in our church. And I said, I had a starter list, good preaching, good personality, you know, lots of things that were on that list. Do you know what came out number one? Someone who remembered my name. That was number one. The preaching was third, I think. Now, I think many people would probably put that number one in evangelical churches. But the more I thought about that, the more I recognized, you know, that I think the survey probably is touching on something that's really important. We all want to be in a community where people recognize we're there. They know our name. They listen to us. Now, I thank God I've got Cece. She remembers names. I've struggled to remember our grandchildren's name. That's really bad. Either I'm getting Alzheimer's or I am basically emotionally and psychologically handicapped at a profound level. But remembering names is powerful. And there have been two or three times when I remembered a person's name. I remember when I didn't expect to. I remember, I forgot now. I was asked to speak at the Thanksgiving service at the community church. It's a Chapel Hill community Thanksgiving service. And I was a new pastor in town. They asked me to speak. They never asked me back for that. And I met a lot of interesting people. After the service, I shook hands. And I remember one fellow's name was George. He was a lawyer from Durham. And I don't know why I remembered him, but I remembered him. I just shook his hand. He introduced himself. And we said a few words, and that was it. It was probably 3 or 4 months later, I met him in another setting. And I said, "Hi, George." And he looked shocked. I mean, he remembered me, but he was shocked that I remembered him. And so was I, that I remembered him. But I remember the expression on his face and how he was shocked by that. But I also know how he probably felt about that. I'm sure what went through his mind, I suspect, was this. This guy met me as one of several hundred people on one occasion, and he remembered my name. That's I feel special. I feel like I'm not alone in this world, on this planet. Now again, that had a powerful effect in my experience. But it hasn't really helped me in terms of remembering people's names. Although I recognize that this is really, really important. It's a sign of our listening. And remembering details. I'm amazed at Cece, my wife. She can remember details of conversations and events that took place dozens of years ago. We've had people over for dinner. She'll remember what she served to them. We can't do that again. We did that 3 years ago when they were over. I mean, I wish I had that kind of memory for details. And I've tried all the tricks in terms of, you know, word pictures and so forth. I'm still working on it. I've got hopefully a few years left. Watch your body language. And again, body language works both ways. We communicate with body language, but we also communicate our listening with body language. I have some painful memories. Most of my illustrations on listening are going to begin negative from my own experience, unfortunately. I remember there was a controversy in the church several years ago over the role of women in the church. Not an unusual controversy. It was the ordination of women to the position of elder. And we at the time had a number of very well-educated and competent women who could not understand why we did not have women as elders. And one of them was the wife of an elder. And she was brilliant and powerful and persuasive and contentious. And I had an arrangement to meet with her and talk about this, because I was concerned about building a bridge. So we had a relationship, but not a close relationship. And I can still remember her coming over to our house. And I basically was on the sofa. I stretched my legs out, laid my head back, put my arms behind my head. She sat in the chair across, and I said, "Let's talk." And I think back at that and said, boy, what I've communicated to her is I am not that interested in all in what she's going to say. She's not going to say anything that's going to change any view that I have. Rather than sitting up and looking her in the eye with a posture of attention, attentiveness, I basically was saying, wake me up when you're through. That is pathetic. That's pathetic. I still remember that. Painfully, painfully. The way in which we make eye contact, the way in which we posture our arms, so forth and so on, tells people whether we're listening or not, or how we're listening. One of my other painful experiences was in an elders meeting. This is a long elders meeting, about 3 hours. We went to 3 hours without a break. And as in many of the elders' meetings in the church, oftentimes I'm not the one doing much of the speaking. I'm pretty much observing what's going on. Now, my pastor friends on the outside didn't believe a word of that. They thought that I ran the church. I said, listen, I just wish I did. I don't. I don't wish I did either, but I said, I seldom get my way. They said, oh, come on, Jim, we know that nothing takes place in the Bible church that doesn't pass by you. I said, well, it passes by me, but it passes by me. It doesn't stop for any advice. Well, after a long period of talking about things that I thought were just elders shouldn't be talking about in terms of trivia, management stuff, I got up, and the elders' meeting was in my office. I got up and stretched and walked over to my bookcase and straightened out some books. Well, that sent a message to the chairman of the Board of Elders. I will not mention his name at the time. He's not in this room, by the way. That basically was not good. And he, bless his heart, had the courage to take me aside and say, that will not do. What you communicated to us is that you were completely disengaged with things that we were doing. You may not feel as though you're making a contribution, but we need your respect to what we're doing. We need your attentiveness. When you check out, that tells us something. My body language in that situation, I said, what do you mean? I said, listen, the meeting was 3 hours long. It didn't involve me. Very frankly, you could go on and make your decision with me straightening out my library. My body language was something I wasn't sensitive to. It wasn't that the books didn't need straightening or that they had to have me there. It was basically the body language, the message I was sending, non-verbally. Everyone has something to teach you. It's not who you listen to, but how you listen. Now, again, you want to listen to the right people in a certain way in terms of really taking their advice. There's some people you don't want to take advice from, but you want to listen to them. Listening to your enemy. Listen to your enemy, for God may be talking. So, Jewish proverb. That's one that we should all heed. But to do that, you've got to know how to listen to your enemy. Tony Campolo has written a book I've recommended several times. We've met the enemy, and they're partly right. Hegel, Nietzsche, Kierkegaard, Freud, Marx, Dostoevsky, all of these were prominent critics of what we'd call Orthodox Christianity. But the point Tony Campolo is making is all of them had something powerful to say that we should not miss. If we miss the insights they had, we are the worst off. Now, you may disagree with them. And he said, evangelical Christians are going to disagree with them on lots of things. But if we hear them in terms of what they offer, the wisdom they really have in certain areas, we will be wiser. See through. Look past the outward. The quality of our listening is seen in what we actually hear. And it may be different than what people say. But Jesus, perceived their malice, speaking to the Pharisees, and then continued to say, to speak to them. The important part of this phrase, it appears often in the Synoptic Gospels, where Jesus is in the presence of others, oftentimes people that don't agree with him, and he perceives, like the woman at the well, he perceives what's going on. Now we say, well, of course, that's Jesus. He knew everything. No. Ed Hinegar made a suggestion that I several years ago I thought was insightful. He said, in many ways, it's more helpful to look at Jesus as being the perfect human. He didn't have supernatural knowledge of everything, but he had full human knowledge. He had the same knowledge we would have if we were in touch with the Spirit of God within us. If we learned how to listen the way the Spirit listens, we would see people too. That doesn't mean we know things that can't be known. It means that we would read between the lines. We would not be looking just at the shield or the image people are presenting to us. We would perceive the heart behind that shield. And so often we sense that in Jesus. He's able to see what's really behind what's being said, and he responds to that. Perceiving their malice, he knew their heart, and he responded to that. Be alert to nonverbal clues, eye contact, shifts in posture, gestures, hesitation, and so forth. Several years ago, Paul Meyer, who was a psychiatry resident at Duke and later ran the Meyer Minerith Clinics, which were popular all over the country for several years, he and I and his wife and Cece were close friends. And every Monday night, we'd get together to watch Dallas on television. And we'd talk. I'd talk about teaching. He'd talk about psychiatry. And he taught me a lot of things. One of the things he taught me was this. He said, when I have a patient that comes in and is telling me their story, he said, I'm listening not just to what they say. I'm looking for trailheads to the issues that really are the problem. And here's the way I find them. When there's a difference in their eye contact, their eyes start shifting, and I ask a question. When the posture goes to this, closed door, why is that closed? When they shift their posture on the chair, little things, he said, when there's a change of certain types, that tells me that topic is touchy. And later I'll come back to that topic, and I'll say, I'll ask more questions about that topic, knowing there's something behind that gesture, that posture, that basically they're uncomfortable talking about. And that's the thing we need to talk about, because that's probably where the problems are. And what he's saying basically is nonverbal communication is really important for a good listener. Give attention to feelings before reasons. I can remember another pain. I'm sorry that I don't have more positive examples from my life, but I don't. This was a person in the church that came in, and their child did not make an athletic team. They were very upset, and because their child did not make the team. And my first question was, well, why didn't they make the team? What did the coach say? Were they good? Or did the coach think they were not as good a player as they could have been? I had all kinds of questions about the facts in terms of their performance. And to my horror and my disgust, this person just basically was very frustrated with me. Didn't feel as though I was helping them at all. I was trying to get to the problem, the root of the problem, and help them understand, you know, the coach's feelings and the coach's concerns here, and the difficult choices he had to make with respect to cutting people from the team. That didn't work. Later, a light came on in my mind. It was several weeks later, unfortunately, but I got it. What this person wanted was not an analysis of why they didn't make the team, their child didn't make the team. They wanted someone to first just empathize with them, just come alongside, notarize their feelings, notarize their frustration as a parent, and to be with them in that. And later, there would be an opportunity to talk about the coach's difficult decision, so forth and so on. But to start with that was not going to be helpful for anyone. Now again, that's more of a guy problem than a gal problem, but it's a person's problem. I mean, all of us want to solve the problem. And solving the problem sometimes just means not solving the problem that's presented, but showing up alongside and listening, not alone.
Or, 65% of men decide things by thinking.
Yeah.
67%. And 65% of women decide things by feeling.
That's right.
I mean, and that's data. So
that's,
men really have a kind of a disability.
Right. We're going to move on here. The men are not listening. No, you're exactly right. You're exactly right. That's and this is why men should not be ashamed of being men, and women not be ashamed of being women. They complement one another as a team. Families are designed for men and women together because they both bring something the other and the family needs. And should value. Articulate what you hear and ask for feedback. Is this what you meant? Before you respond, say, this is what I hear you saying. Is that correct? Is this what you're trying to say? Just that little pause of asking for clarification can be an important bridge to communicate that you really want to listen. Wilson Misner is not a nice guy. He's a playwright. He was a con artist. He had a terrible record in and out of prison, broken relationships, so forth and so on. I use him as an example because he has some quotable quotes that most of us are familiar with. This is one of them. When you steal from one another, it's plagiarism. If you steal from many, it's research. Here's another one. Be nice to people on the way up, because you'll meet them the same people on the way down. But this is the one that I want to use today. A good listener not only gains popularity, but also wisdom. We not only edify others, if we listen well, we're going to learn and profit in the process. A wise old owl sat on an oak, you've heard this one perhaps. The more he saw, the less he spoke. The less he spoke, the more he heard. We all should follow that wise old bird. Next week, we'll talk about responding and anger. We'll reduce that to one lesson. Any questions, additions, subtractions?
Yes.
Yes.
I think sometimes there's also the other side of that, where people don't want to be listened to.
Oh, certainly, certainly.
But definitely want to talk.
Yes.
And very often you recognize that they work in cliches. And beyond that cliche, they are unwilling to go.
Yes.
And then what do you do?
Well, sometimes you don't communicate. I think that when people are dodging and weaving, skillful questions can basically force them or move them to being honest. And a lot of times, being vulnerable ourselves to communicate, it's safe to be honest. Most men do not go to counseling for a number of reasons. One, they don't feel that they'll be understood. The counselor won't understand them. My problem is too complex. Secondly, there is no solution to my problem. You know, I've done all the easy stuff, and it can't be changed. Thirdly, the counselor is going to ask me to do something I'm not willing or ready to do. And for that reason, you know, I just don't want to spend $150 an hour for someone to just say, uh-huh, I hear you, you know. Go ahead. Yes, Barry.
Yeah. Maybe, you know, have a dinner with them and then maybe see them a year yeah. and a half later and they would say, how's your wife, Anne?
Yeah.
I have a theory that executives have that ability.
Or they cultivate it.
Yeah.
You'd be surprised how many people will take notes and work at remembering details. Not an unwise idea. Yes. Yeah.
And I used to be I don't remember names either. I'm ADHD and it just flies out. But I was I was the director of a daycare for the elderly, and I knew it was really important that all of them, that I remember all their names. And so every time I called them by their name three times, so that's the only time in my life that I remember 20 person's names easily, all the time. And I just consciously called them by their name three times, and it really seemed.
I've heard that before too, and I think that's that you're wise. That's
yes. I'd be wise if I used it all the time.
I know.
As I've gotten into my 80s, so many of my friends are widows now. It's awesome the number of phone calls where they just want you to listen.
Yep, that's true. And especially if they share their heart.
Yeah.
If we're talking about the weather in the Tar Heels, I mean, that's different. But when people share their heart.
Are you suggesting that showing Tar Heels is not showing your heart?
That's often, yeah. Well, there's we'll talk about this next week. There are six types of talk. There's small talk, the weather, and there's shop talk, common interests, Tar Heels. There's steer talk, where I'm trying to convince you to agree with me. And there's shield talk, where I'm trying to keep you from prying into my life. None of those do anything in terms of communication unless they lead to the last two, which is basically search talk, where I basically draw you out, or straight talk, where I tell you I speak not just from my image, but from my heart in terms of what I really am afraid of, what I really find exciting, and what really I see as the priority concerns. And oftentimes we never get to straight talk. But relationships are, communities built on straight talk. Churches are built on straight talk, healthy churches. In most churches, it's small talk and shop talk. Once in a while, steer talk.
Yeah. Be who you are, where you're at.
That's the seek or the search talk, where basically I make it safe for you to be honest. Yep. Straight. Yeah.